I'm so thankful now for the way that like all of that played out. Obviously I would love to have him here more than anything. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think that. But I am really, really thankful for the way that that experience has been redeemed in my life in multiple facets. One of them just being the way that, with subsequent pregnancies and births, I have been so much more invested in what can I do, what is on my responsibility.
Welcome to the podcast where we get into the real and raw of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. My name is Hannah Gill. I'm a VBAC mom, doula, and birth educator, and I help women discover their options and harness their inner power to have the experiences they desire. I'm here to support you through the ebbs and flows of these transformative years so we can have open and honest conversations about the hard, the messy, and the beautiful parts of motherhood. This is the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. Hey, welcome back to the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. Today is an exciting day because it is episode number 10, and it is also my first guest episode. Today, our guest is Joy Lily Young, and she is going to be talking about her birth experiences, navigating loss, and how her experiences has shaped her as a woman and mother. I will preface this episode by saying that we do discuss infant loss and miscarriage during this episode, so if that is not something you want to listen to, please do not go further. Joy is a nomadic human who has lived in Indiana since 2015, when her handsome husband swept her off her feet and convinced her to put down some roots. Her first year of marriage sent her head first into the world of motherhood and birth, and then into navigating mothering and grieving after a traumatic hospital birth and the loss of her first little one. She turned to photography as a creative outlet that allowed her to serve fellow mamas in her son's honor, and became all the more connected with the birth community in Indy. Today, she is a grateful mama of two more sweet boys who are earthside and one more heaven-dwelling baby, a passionate birth advocate, motherhood photographer, and aspiring homesteader. In her free time, she loves dating her husband, going on outdoor adventures, and trying every coffee shop she finds. So please welcome Joy to the show. How do I have a VBAC? This is a question I get asked a lot. Women will message me and say, I know I want to have a VBAC, but I have no idea how to prepare or how to find the resources. Well, that's exactly why I created my First Steps to VBAC guide. It's called Preparing for a VBAC, Your First Three Steps to an Empowered Birth Experience. This is the guide you need if you're thinking, I don't know how to go about finding a supportive provider, or I'm not sure how to understand or process my C-section experience. If you have had questions about these things and you're wondering if you're on the right track, then you need to download this guide. I want you to go to ebbandflowbirthco.com/first-steps, all one word, FIRSTSTEPS, or click the link where you're listening to this episode now. I know that getting started with VBAC prep and finding support is something a lot of women are struggling with. And I want you to have a solid foundation for your VBAC prep journey because it doesn't have to be such a stressful process. So again, go to ebbandflowbirthco.com/first-steps to grab this free guide today. So welcome, Joy. If you want to go ahead and get right into your first birth experience and how that unfolded, that would be great.
Yeah, so I'll just dive right in. My first birth, I came from a very conventional medicine background. So I remember before we were even married, my husband, mentioning something about like, hey, we should have a home birth. And I was just like, whoa, that's wild. Have you heard of the hospital? And so I was just completely like, uninterested in home birth. I went on to research it a little bit more, and immediately started liking some of the stuff I was seeing, mostly the fact that I would know who was there and that it was going to be a small group, because the chaos of like how many people show up in a hospital room was an overwhelming thought to me. So I am a very low-key person, and so we didn't find our midwife until I think I was 23 weeks along. But we ended up finding a great midwife who I absolutely loved. She was the midwife that served my mother-in-law with her last baby, and she lived about 45 minutes from us. So it was a little trek, but she was just absolutely amazing. We loved her, and I immediately connected with her. So we moved forward with that. Everything was fine and dandy. I was sick for like the first half of the pregnancy. I threw up almost every day. But other than that, it was a very like chill pregnancy. Everything was great. Numbers came back great. Like nothing ever went wrong during the pregnancy. And then we got to 41 weeks, and we had been doing co-care with a doctor that this midwife worked with, and not my favorite person ever. Definitely did not trust the process. But he was who she worked with, so we went and went along with the process of like, hey, if you go over a week late, then they have you come in and do a non-stress test and all that. So we went in for the non-stress test, and when we got through that process, they were like, we need to induce immediately. You're low on amniotic fluid, all of this. I mean, it got really scary. So we didn't know what to do. I hadn't researched a whole lot on that. We'd done a birth class at the hospital, and I'm like really thankful in retrospect that we did, because they talked about C-sections and things like that that I would not have done if I'd, well, I probably wouldn't have really learned much about if I had been in just a home birth class. But I had done pretty minimal research up until that point, because I just was confident in our midwife, and I just didn't know what to research. It was my first time being a mom, first time doing this whole thing, and I didn't know what to research on almost anything. So, and I felt very, like, I would say I felt very capable of taking care of a kid. I'd grown up babysitting, I'd been a nanny, I'd had a lot of experience with kids, so I wasn't worried about like the taking care of the kid part of it. Yeah, so I had done some research, but not enough to really prepare me for what I was getting into. I think that's really what it comes down to. I'd actually done quite a bit of research. I wasn't ready yet. Anyways, so we called the midwife, and she was like, yeah, we have to do this. If the doctor said we were going, we're going. So we never really got to experience what it was like to go into labor. We checked into the hospital that night, got to go home, pack our bags, thankfully, because the doctor was like, just go over to the hospital right now. And we were like, we were in Bloomington, and at the time we were living in Beech Grove. So I was like, hey, we gotta at least show up at the hospital with the stuff we need. We can't just like go from here. Again, I didn't have a hospital bag packed. I had nothing ready because I was gonna have this child at home. So we went back home, got our stuff ready, drove down to the hospital, had a chance to like kind of recoup, change gears, and they started me on like the stuff that they do before the whole induction process in the morning. So like I think it was cervical ripener and
Was it
something
like
else.
Cervidil or Cytotec or something like that?
I think it was the first one that you mentioned. That
Cervidil,
one sounds familiar.
that's usually more common. It kind of depends on like how dilated and stuff you already are, but
So
yeah.
I was like not dilated at all. Like maybe I think it was like a half a centimeter or something. It was like something ridiculous. So yeah, I was like definitely not ready to have that kid. And they like came in at like 8 that morning, and they like started Pitocin, and I was still in the mindset of like I still want to have a natural birth as much as possible. I guess when I say natural, I mean unmedicated birth.
Right.
Not just a vaginal delivery. So I just kept praying and hoping that this would work, and I started the Pitocin. They just kept upping it every couple hours, where they keep checking and stuff, and it wasn't going very quick, so they kept going up and going up, and finally it hit a point where I was like, I am not coping well with this. So I was still kind of pressing on towards the prize, you know, but I wasn't mentally, I was getting exhausted.
Right.
And we'd been at it for probably about 12 hours of active labor at that point. And which isn't that long compared to a lot of people. It's not that long. But that's when I was like, I need something to eat, and they don't let you eat. And then I was like, I need to like labor in the tub. And they let me labor in the tub for 45 minutes. And they literally told me the baby was getting too comfortable.
Too
And I
comfortable.
was like, well, baby's been working hard. I've been working hard.
You
I
both
was
need
like,
a rest.
yeah, I mean, like, I nearly fell asleep in the tub because it helped that much. And so I was really thankful for that little relief, but I was like, please let me stay longer. I mean, and it just was because his heart rate kept dipping a little bit, but
Right.
it wasn't in a dangerous zone. I think they just weren't happy that I wasn't continuing to progress at that point, which, you know, I understand. And at the same time, I was like, it really matters how well mom was doing during labor, not just like how quickly are things going.
Right.
So around 24 hours, I think I finally had like hit my max of like the whole process, and I was like, hey, I really need an epidural
Yeah, you know
now.
your limit.
Oh, I remember what it was. They were like, hey, we can break your water and then it'll probably speed things up. And, you know, at that point, I was like, anything to get this baby out, let's do it, you know? And it was not what I wanted to do for
Yeah.
sure. And it was not really presented as a choice. It was definitely much more of a, we
We're
are going
doing
into
this. Yeah.
this.
And breaking your water like makes things more intense generally, so.
It does. And I didn't know that. Again, one of those things I hadn't researched. Now I know.
You don't know what you don't know until you know it.
Yes, it's so true. And I was really thankful. Our midwife was with us that whole time. So I did feel like we had some support. But it was just really scary being in the hospital. I hated it. The doctor that we had was absolutely just like no bedside manner, just like he was there to do his job, and that's what he was there for. And you know, we had some really friendly nurses, but it's still just like none of them were jiving with like where we were coming from, where we were like, hey, we want this to be a good experience. And that wasn't what they were about. So that was really hard. You know, a lot of times they were just kind of like frustrated by the fact that we would try to like advocate for ourselves. And it
Yeah.
was just like, you know, I understand you have protocols. And at the same time, like everybody's a different person. Every
Yeah.
mom that comes in here is different and has different needs. So I don't know. It's hard to know like what could have been different because
Right.
obviously I was in a very distant headspace at that point. So anyways, yeah, after they broke the water, I was like, I can't keep going at this point. I was like shaking. I was not doing well. And so I took an epidural and it gave like a small amount of relief, but it was really stressful because at that point they wouldn't let me get up and, you know, change positions and everything, even though I could absolutely feel my legs. I could
Right.
do everything normally. It changed the way that they let me take on labor at that point.
Yeah.
And then every time I was like, hey, if we turn to this side, like this is the side that the baby typically was really happy on, which sounds funny, but like as a mom, you kind of have that intuition of
You
like, you
do,
know,
yeah.
where is the baby comfortable? And they wouldn't let me roll over to that side. And they just kept like doing things like that where it was like my choice was gone at that point. So it was really hard. And then after a few hours of that, they were like, the baby's heart rate, it keeps decelerating and it's not coming back the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, like it
So they
wasn't
were like,
recovering fast enough. Yeah.
which makes sense. That happens a lot during, like, you know that. It happens a lot during like an epidural and during contractions and all of that. Like you might not feel it, but the contractions are getting more intense on the baby too, not just on the mom. So they were like, at that point, the doctor came in and was like, you have the choice basically of having a C-section. We chatted with our midwife and she was like, yeah, that's basically the choice you've got right now. She's like, there's not really another out. And so we kind of talked about it for a second. She was like, do you want, you know, your husband to go back with you or do you want me to? And and Will like faints at the sight of anybody hurting basically. So I was like, yeah, you're coming with us. Will can wait outside. So she came back with us. And I mean, I have to hand it to them. They are fast. When they go, it's an emergency C-section. 5 minutes later, you're back there. You
Yeah,
know, like
they
they do
do.
not waste time. So they did a great job with that. I did ask to like have kind of like a gentle C-section where I could like watch them pulling the baby out.
Yeah.
They did take him back to like do the Apgar and everything away from me. So I didn't get to like hold him immediately, but I got to like have him next to me very quickly. And then right after I got to like, you know, meet him and hold him for a second, they wheeled him over to Will and Will got to hold him immediately. So
Okay, that's good.
yeah, so we kind of had a little bit of a good turnaround towards the end, but then I was left with a C-section that I wasn't expecting to recover from.
Right.
And so that was a whole thing. So anyways, after that, I was like, ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. And I like we got our rest in that morning, and then I was like, I'm in the shower, I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna take pictures of my kid. And I just started doing what I normally did, and I think it like freaked the doctors out. But I was just like, I wanted to, as much as possible, have an experience where I was like the mom, and I wasn't
Involved, yeah.
sending, yeah, I wasn't sending the kid off to the nursery. Which nothing against that. That's not like for some people that's what you need. And for me it was just very important to like be up and at him a little bit and
Right.
like taking care of the baby. So I was really thankful for that. So basically, after that, you know, we got to have two beautiful days in the hospital with our little boy. We had a good number of people come visit. And we've just really like soaked it in like 100%. Like I hardly touched my phone those entire 2 days. I have like literally not a single picture on my phone of our kid. I just like was all in. And it was just really cool. Like we just stayed there and got to watch him. They did like, you know, his little hearing test, the 24-hour test, 48-hour test, and he passed all of it with flying colors. Like there's nothing wrong. And then he had been eating great too. That was something that was amazing to me, was like he just instantly, there was such a good like breastfeeding relationship. And yeah, so then at 50 hours I just was holding him. He was asleep and he never woke back up, and that's basically all we really knew at the time. So the morning that we were supposed to be discharged from the hospital was when that happened. I immediately woke Will up and I like yelled. I was like, Oliver, and he like wouldn't move. And I was like, Will, I don't think he's breathing. And Will jumped out of bed faster than I've ever seen before. And like he hit the nurse call button in like seconds. They were in there. The nurse looked over it and like saw him. And had been like starting to put gloves on, and she threw the gloves onto the ground and was like, give me the baby, I've got to go. And so we just like hand him off to her. She ran him back to the like NICU. And then a couple minutes later, you know, we were like sitting there like, what just happened? And praying and just like begging the Lord for something to turn around. So we were just there like just praying for something to turn around. And then a few minutes later, they came and got us, and they were like, here's what we're trying to do. Like, we don't know what happened. And we were like, we don't know what happened. And they were trying to resuscitate, and they were able to get his heart rate up with an epi, but nothing else. And so they tried that a couple times, and eventually, like after about 30, 35 minutes, they brought him swaddled up to us, and they were like, "We've done everything we can do. Like nothing's gonna work." And even if something did work, like it's been so long since he's had oxygen that, you know, it's unlikely anything will help, even if he could breathe. And so that's kind of where we were left at. They like took us back to a little room that was just like a little office, and they had like the chaplain come in and stuff, and chaplain said a bunch of nice things, and we were just kind of like, okay, thanks, you know, for coming. And then our midwife came. We had called her almost immediately after this happened. We were like, hey, we don't know what happened. Just, you know, explain everything to her. And she was there like literally within like 45 minutes. She was just like came over and like prayed with us and cried with us, and it was amazing. Like it was just, she was there and like ready to support us. Yeah, and then, you know, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, I guess if you haven't lost a kid, you don't know this, but if you lose a kid in the hospital, DCS comes and talks to you and is like, you know, is there any previous history of abuse and all this stuff? And we're like, oh my gosh, what is happening right now?
That's so overwhelming.
Yeah, and so we went through that whole process. Then we had a coroner come after they had like done some pictures and stuff with the baby with us, and I had taken a few pictures, and but you know, you're just not in the headspace of like, what do we want to remember? You have no idea what's going on. Everything's
No.
spinning. And so you know, they brought the coroner in and they were like, hey, we need to do an autopsy, and you know, let us know when you're done holding the baby, basically. And then we got all of that squared away, and we left the hospital that afternoon, and no baby in hand, just us wheeled out, basically. So, yeah, that was a crazy ending that we never expected.
Yeah. So did they ever give you an answer for what happened?
So they didn't. That's the wild thing about it. Basically nothing. They ran a bunch of tests. They actually ran like some metabolic tests too, and like some genetic things. Nothing popped up. The best answer that we have found after doing research, like years later, we kind of revisited it, and we're just like, what can we figure out? The best thing that we can figure out was that it was a adverse reaction to the vitamin K shot.
Okay.
It's very, very rare, but if you look at the inserts on it, it's got a black box warning. Death is an uncommon side effect of it, and the type of death was the type that he experienced, which is spontaneous asphyxiation. So, and that just means we don't really know.
Yeah,
But
so kind of like a, not really like SIDS, but kind of like a
yes,
SIDS
kind of like SIDS.
diagnosis. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Where there's not really like a root cause that they can detect. So that's the best answer that we have found so far. That was the only medication that we did, or like the only medical intervention that we did with him. There were no other shots. There were no other, like, I didn't even really take almost any Tylenol. So he wasn't getting that, like, from the milk. So yeah, so there was that, and then there was the different medications that obviously were put in through the IV, like the Pitocin and stuff.
So you just never, you never know, which that can't be. I bet that was hard to like sit with and accept not having an answer.
Yeah, it was really hard, especially right after it happened, because everybody wanted to know like what happened, and the best we could do at the time was just like, we don't know. We literally have no answers. And it's just hard because, you know, I have a lot of medical people in part of my family, like doctors and nurses, and a lot of them would look at the pictures and be like, I figured out the answer, it's this. And it's like, I mean, if the doctors that were there couldn't tell me that, like, I kind of doubt that.
And
It's
they're
hard
probably
because
having,
they're trying to make sense of it too.
yeah, they're probably like trying to make sense of it. They're probably having good intentions, but that's not
Yes.
the most helpful thing for them to be doing at that time.
Yes, exactly. So it was hard, but I'm so thankful now for the way that like all of that played out. Obviously, I would love to have him here more than anything. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't think that. But I am really, really thankful for the way that that experience has been redeemed in my life in multiple facets. One of them just being the way that, with subsequent pregnancies and births, I have been so much more invested in what can I do? What is on my responsibility? And I don't think that there's anything I could have done better that I knew of that first time around. I think the first time around was what taught me, like, hey, these are the things to now research.
You
And so
do
I
the
did.
best you can with the information you have.
Yes, exactly. And I just remember, like, my mother-in-law gave me like an essential oil roller to help with healing the C-section scar. It healed so fast and so well that our doctor was even like, I usually am not used to like seeing them this good at this point. And so then I was like, then, my cynical kind of like, I don't think this stuff works mind was like, okay, all right. I was like, maybe I need to start being more open to other options that aren't just like pharmaceutical based options, because that was still where my mind was at. So I started looking into things more and just researching more, and I felt like I kept finding answers that were blowing my mind. They were not what I had grown up with, but I was learning so much, and I felt so much more equipped to like go into pregnancy a second time to actually like be able to help our kids more holistically and not just try to treat symptoms, but actually like be a part of helping raise them well. And that was just really exciting to me. It has kind of started a whole new passion project of like, okay, our family will be healthy and we're not just going to do sick care, we're going to do well care,
Well, that is a good point to take a quick break, and then we'll get into how your next birth experience or pregnancy and birth experience went. All right. If you're wanting to have an unmedicated birth, listen up. I've had so many women ask me how I prepared for my unmedicated VBAC, how I went from having an epidural with my first birth to giving birth completely unmedicated the second time around. And the answer is HypnoBabies. This is the exact course I took to help prepare my mind for an unmedicated birth. Because really, it comes down to your mindset about the process of birth. Your mind will give up before your body does. HypnoBabies is a full childbirth education course that has a focus on hypnosis for birth, how to be in tune with your body and your baby, and how to fully relax your mind and surrender to the process. You can enroll using my affiliate link at ebbandflowbirthco.com/hypnobabies and use code ebbandflow for 10% off. You can take ownership of your experience and have the unmedicated birth you desire. Again, go to ebbandflowbirthco.com/hypnobabies and use code ebb and flow. Okay, so if you want to go ahead and get into your next experiences, then that would be great.
So, my second pregnancy was with Lincoln, and his was, I hate to say this because I know every mom is always jealous, but his was a great pregnancy, and I was sick for very little of the time, and everything else about it was an absolute dream. So, his was super great. We found a midwife that was closer to us, and we planned for a home birth again. I was really set on it this time. I was like, nothing is going to change this one. And then we got to like 32, 34 weeks, and I had developed diet-controlled gestational diabetes, which is,
Ugh.
that's a whole thing. But it doesn't risk you out of midwifery care usually.
Okay.
However, given like the first experience and everything else, like just the PTSD of being in the hospital at all, she recommended like, hey, I think it would be really good if you can just kind of start getting your headspace there, like prepare mentally to be in the hospital, go ahead and find a doctor who supports you and give it that good start so that you don't end up in the hospital in some kind of an emergency situation because we don't know if you can have a natural delivery.
Right. I want to
So,
interject real here.
yeah.
So a lot of people would kind of push back against that. Like they don't want to even have that in their headspace, like the potential of going to the hospital. But like you said, like it could be good to get yourself, because it's experience you went through before, if you did have to end up in the hospital, you want to have that mental preparation so you're not shell-shocked and just put off by the whole thing. So if you prepare ahead of time, as I mean, as much as you can prepare for that type of thing, it can really help like ease the blow a little bit, I think, instead of going into it blind.
Yeah, and I think something that not enough mom prep resources tell you is the headspace that you are in as a mom, like the mental game of birth is such a big part of it. It
Oh,
isn't
yeah.
just where you deliver. It isn't just the birth plan. It's not just like these different practical things. Like the actual emotional state that you are in when you're giving birth is huge. And I think that's where, I mean, like that's where having a doula is a huge, huge blessing.
I think the mental state is more than anything else, because I mean, as we all have heard, like your mind gives up before your body does. So just like really being mentally prepared for everything can change your whole experience.
Yes, it really can. And I was really thankful for her recommendation on that because I would not have personally been, I think, brave enough to say, I'm gonna go to the hospital again. But with her saying like, hey, I think that would be wise for you to do, and I will come and support as like a birth support, I felt strong enough to like say, okay, we're doing that again. And we did find a great doctor who was just like 100% on board with letting us do a trial of labor. And he would even let us go a little bit over if we needed to. And so I really appreciated that because I was like, we could be in for the long haul again. And I mean, much to my surprise, I was shooting a wedding up in Michigan when I went into labor to
Oh
almost 2 weeks early.
no.
And
Oh.
so that was crazy. I finished it up. I was like, nope, we are focusing on the task at hand. Finished shooting that. I was gonna stay the night, but I was like, I should probably get home.
Yeah.
I did, as I mean, like I said before, I'm a pretty low-key person, so I did have everything I needed in the car in case I needed to deliver the baby myself, because I was like, huh, that's a possibility. So I felt prepared in that way. I learned from the first time. I had my stuff with me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I made it home. Labor stopped throughout the day on Saturday, and then Sunday morning it picked up, and we went to the hospital. And 16 hours later, we had a baby. But yeah, that one they let me labor in the tub, which I was amazed because it was an actual birth tub, and
Okay.
they let me labor in the tub as long as I wanted to, basically. It was such a good labor. We got to walk around. It was really, really hard. I did take an epidural. My doula told me it was probably about at transition. She was like, you were so close to getting there without
When
it.
everyone wants it.
Yeah, when everybody wants it. And but it was like it did lead to one of my favorite memories of that birth, which was just like the doctor was like, you can take a nap now. And I was like, no way. And he's like, yeah. And so I did. I took a little nap and then I woke up and just we like hung out for a little bit. He was like, just let me know whenever you want to have the baby. So like we just kind of all hung out, like my husband, my doula, our midwife. We just all just sat in there chatting for probably half an hour and just kind of like, I don't know, pre-gaming before the baby. And then the doctor came in, he was like, you want to have the baby? And I'm like, sure, you know. So I think I pushed for just like a little bit. Like it was so short and Lincoln was out and it was so, so good. I never felt like there was a point at which my body was like, yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. And that was such an amazing feeling
Yeah.
to just be like, I know exactly, like I'm in tune with my body. I know exactly what's happening. I felt completely in control as I was pushing. Like everything about it was just such a good birth. And then when he came out, it was amazing. Like, it's just like, oh my gosh, I did it, you know? So there's nothing quite as good as knowing that you had a successful VBAC and
Yes.
like your baby is good. Like he's here, he's healthy. So that was the next one. Then the third baby, that was a miscarriage at 8 weeks. We did have him at home. It surprised me. I will have to say this because I did not know what a miscarriage looked like. And it surprised me how much it paralleled like a birth. Like I started having contractions that had like an obvious start and a finish to them. And it felt very much like contractions. It just never got as intense as a birth did.
Did you have
So
to take like the medication to help it, or was it just
no, it just all
everything?
happened naturally.
Okay.
I think that was the Lord's grace on us
Yeah.
because it was very like it was very easy in the physical sense of like we got to like just take some time. I started bleeding that morning and I had like that inkling, like the gut feeling of like this
You
is the end of
know,
it.
yeah.
And so we just were able to take it on that day, and it helped to have kind of that warning. So yeah, and then he was, or that baby, we don't know if it was he or she, but that baby was born in the wee hours of the morning. And then we were really excited to have another baby, so we were like, let's just try again as soon as we can. And I started getting discouraged because it had been like 4 months and we hadn't gotten pregnant again, and I was like, oh my goodness, like it's gonna be forever. And then I think at month five we got a positive pregnancy test, and so that was our last little baby, who's the one that you hear on this recording. He's 10 months, and he was a successful water birth. So we finally got to we had the same midwife with Lincoln, with the baby that we miscarried, and then with this one, we used the same midwife, all three of those. And this time, we got to have a baby finally at home in the comfort of our own room. He was born in the water. I got to pull him out, and I mean, we didn't find out what he was before, and it was just like it was a good surprise.
Yeah.
So here we are, three boys strong, and I'm amazed because I definitely thought I was going to be a girl mom.
Really? And you got three
I was
boys.
like, I never wanted boys because I was just like, I was one of two girls. I was like, I don't really know what to do with boys. They have cooties, you know. I was not, I don't know. I grew up with like girls are just cute and clean and bows and you know.
Yeah.
But now that I have boys, I absolutely love it.
Couldn't
And
imagine it another
I
way.
couldn't imagine something else. Yeah, I'm like, they're so much fun. So
Okay, so what do you feel like all of your experience, like how do you feel they have changed the way you mother and like live your life on a day-to-day basis?
yeah, that's a good question. Obviously the first one has really like rocked our world with like the way that it impacts daily life. It's hard, like motherhood is hard, and I think anybody who's a mom knows that. So I never want to say it flippantly when I'm like, you just don't know how long you have with your kids. You don't. And at the same time, that doesn't take away from how hard it is. And
Right.
like some moments are incredibly mundane, and some moments are just incredibly frustrating. And you're like, I wish I didn't have you right now because
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with you. So like, it's a really hard tension to like walk that line of like appreciating every moment and also acknowledging how intense the responsibility of being a mom and being on call 24/7 is.
Yeah.
And I realize that's not necessarily like every mom's experience, especially if, oh, we have so much to say. If you're not a stay-at-home mom, maybe that's a little bit different, but I don't really think it is. Like, I think that even when you have your kids in care with somebody else, you're still on, and even if it's different. So yeah, I think that trying to like navigate how to appreciate them and also, you know, be fully in tune with the challenges of motherhood. I think that's a really big part of it. And I think it has really changed, like I said earlier, the way that we have taken on just a philosophy of life, where it's like now we focus a lot on making sure that we are making healthy choices all around and not just trying to remedy things if they go wrong. And that is something that has really drastically changed in my life as like a person. And then as a mom, obviously it's influenced the way that I mother them too, where it's like, okay, we spend time outside every day. Things like that, where it's like, let's do things that are healthy ahead of time.
Before something happens.
Yes.
Do you, like, what would you, since you had such different experiences every single time, what would you say is your biggest piece of advice for like a first-time mom preparing for birth?
Okay. I've got two things that come to mind, like just right off the bat when you ask that. The first one is hire a doula. And I'm not just saying this because you are one. I'm saying that because I did not realize how much a good doula makes a difference. The first two times we kind of had, okay, I'm just going to say, we had my sister-in-law who was training to be a doula, and she's amazing, and we love her to death. But the third time around, our midwife's assistant is a doula as well, and she wasn't technically supposed to be our doula, but she stepped into that role quite a bit, and it was unbelievable the difference it made. And if I could recommend her, I would recommend her literally every person on the planet because she was
I
so
think I know who
helpful.
you're talking about, but I'm not going to name names because I don't know if they want to be
Okay.
named. So,
You probably do. It was so good. It was literally a 3.5 hour birth, or like, I was
wow.
like, we went from like 28 hours the first time, 16 hours to 3.5 hours. And I was like, how much money do you want? I will have you at every So yeah. And it makes such a big difference. And I feel like when you have one that has that experience to bring, you don't have to feel like the entire weight of the birth experience is on you. And I'm not saying that like they take over and then like suddenly you're out of control, you know, like you don't have any same things. No, they get to know you so well that when you are in birth and you don't have like the brain capacity to start like trying to make big decisions, they know what you want and they can be like an advocate for you. They can help make sure that you are still like keeping on the task of like what you were hoping for. And they cheer you on, like they're your biggest cheerleader. I don't know. There's just so many things I could say about that. So anyways, that's my first thing. Get a doula. Second thing is just like, and this is a big task, but do your research, but then also research the things that you hope won't happen. And
I love
you don't
that.
have to like go into the black hole of like researching everything to the nth degree, but be familiar with the other options that might be presented to you, so that you don't feel overwhelmed when they are presented to you or if they are presented to you. Because I think the overwhelm is a big part. Like I said, you know, like your headspace is, you know, your emotions going into the birth, that is such a big part of it. If you start feeling overwhelmed, you start giving up. So yeah, I would say like do your research, know what you're comfortable with, communicate what you're comfortable with the people that are supporting you in your birth. And then you will feel freed up to actually like be all there when you're having your baby.
And so I'll comment on both of those.
Yeah.
The first with the doula. So, before I became a doula, I had an experience with a doula during my birth, which is one of the reasons I became a doula. But I will agree that they keep you on your plan as much as possible without like being pushy. So they're not like trying to convince you otherwise of things you want. But for example, for my birth experience when I was in transition, I told my doula, I was like, I need an epidural. Like, give me an epidural right now. And she said, well, let's just like take a minute, let's discuss it, let's change positions. So they know how to get you to stay on your plan without saying like you're deviating from your plan.
Yes. They
because
don't ever say you're about to fail. They're
yes
just like, let's distract you.
right and that's the whole point. They're because you, like you said, you're not in the right headspace. I mean, you're in the headspace for birth, but you're not in the headspace to be like advocating for yourself, which I mean, you
Yes.
shouldn't have to advocate for yourself in birth anyway, but we're not even going to discuss that right now. That's a whole nother episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, you see, you're not in the mental headspace to just be like making huge decisions and like signing consent forms and all that stupid stuff. So yeah, doulas can be a great advocate for like making sure like your wishes are respected. I agree with that as like wholeheartedly. And as far as like preparing for things that you don't want to happen, yes, 100%, because I didn't even like read the C-section part of my birth class before my first. So it was like, yeah, that's emergencies. That doesn't happen. That won't happen to me. Like, no. So I like glanced over it. It's like, okay, C-section, cool. So yes, definitely preparing for what you don't want to happen too, because like you said, so you're not like blindsided by it. I completely agree with that. I love those pieces of advice. So what do you feel like would be a piece of advice or just thoughts to share with moms that may be experiencing loss right now and how to like cope with that and handle that and get through it, especially as a first-time mom?
So I think as a first-time mom, that one specifically, I feel like it's a really, really okay, maybe I shouldn't even say first time any mom. I'm going back to any mom. It's a really, really important thing to reconnect with your partner at that point. And you know, that I mean, I'm going to say it from a marriage perspective because we've been married, but that is one of the biggest things that divides a marriage. It is, I think I read the stats on it. It was like, it was either 78 or 87. Can I get the two numbers mixed up? But it was like a huge percentage of couples that have gone through child loss do not make it
Heard that
past that
too.
experience.
Yeah.
So it is. That is literally like at the top of the list of priorities is make sure that you guys take time for you and reconnect, do whatever you need to actually like make sure you are staying in step with each other. And in step does not look like grieving the same way because you will grieve differently. Almost everybody does, but that's like all the more so evident when you are living alongside somebody. You see the ways that they grieve, like when they're not being watched too. And it's very hard sometimes to be in different stages of grief at different points. But like if you can come to accept that, it will make it a lot easier to continue to do life together until you guys kind of do fall in line. And you will. I think that if you stick with it, you will kind of both hit a point where you are kind of in the outro phase of grieving. Not that you ever finish grieving, but the shock does wear off and you don't keep necessarily like going through like a hamster wheel, I guess.
Right.
So yeah, so first thing I think is connect with your spouse. And then other things that I think were helpful, if you do have other kids, let people watch them so that you can get that space. You know, for us it wasn't, that wasn't something that we had to deal with, but now when I've looked back, like, well, I mean, with the miscarriage actually, even we did have somebody come watch our kid, and we just got like a day, like a 24-hour period of time to just like grieve and be in that moment. And I feel like that's really important. Like, even if your loss is a miscarriage, most people don't think that's as big of a loss. And it's different for sure. But I think that you need to be able to process it to be able to re-enter life in a healthy way. So those were big things for us. And then I think as far as like some of the social things, people bombarded us with books, which was in like it was very precious. It meant a lot that they were trying to like help. But I'm just gonna give you permission to not read all the books. You don't need to. And sometimes you will find a gem out there that really does help. But don't feel like you have to read every book. Don't feel like you have to use every resource that people give you. Don't feel like you have to say yes to people's offers for things because it can be really, really overwhelming how many people try to jump in at that point in life. Let the people who are closest to you be the ones to support you because they already knew where you were at before, and they're often the ones that know what you need the best too. But if people bring you food, say yes to food. Always say yes to
Always food. Always say yes
it.
to food.
Like, it is crazy. I don't know. I'm like, I always thought like, oh, that's just like a thing you see in movies. And then when it happened to us, I was like, you really do forget to eat. And you might not feel like eating, but you forget to eat. It's very healthy to keep eating. So yeah.
I feel like postpartum in general, you forget to eat.
Yes.
And like, I never heard about like even just postpartum meal trains. Like with my first, the second one, I was like, bring me all the food. I'm not cooking for weeks. Please bring me food.
Oh my goodness, yes, with our second one that's here too, I also was like, I did not anticipate how much time was going to be spent just like managing two kids at the
Oh,
very
yeah.
beginning. And I was like hungry all the time. And literally, I think people who brought us food kept us alive for the first month of his being here.
And the transition from one to two is just like,
It's
whoa.
brutal. Yeah, and it's.
And I know so many people say 0 to 1 is the hardest. No, one to two is hard. And I'm like mentally preparing myself. If we have a third, I'm like, oh my gosh, being outnumbered and everything else, like I can't imagine. But everyone's family dynamic's different, so I know it's gonna be different for everyone, but 1 to 2 was the hardest for us for sure.
It definitely kicked my butt. I was not expecting it to be hard.
Okay, Joyce, so thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your stories today. I really appreciate you being here as my first guest. Very exciting.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Where can people find you like online on social media or your website?
Yeah, so my website is easy. It's joylilyphotography.com. And it's Joy Lily, like Joyllie. A lot of people spell it with two L's. So it's that. On Instagram, I have two accounts. I have a personal account, which is like kind of my more like homesteading and like documentary motherhood stuff. And that one is the Micro Creative. And then I have my photography one, which is just Joy Lily Photography. And on that one, I share more client work and cute baby pictures. If you like cute baby pictures, that's the place
Everyone
to
loves cute baby pictures.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share before we go?
Okay, actually, yes, I have one more thing that I just thought of that
Okay.
I'm like, I should have shared this on your last question. But the number one thing that helped us through all of the experiences, like the loss and also through like mothering in like now with kids that are here, is like holding on to the Lord through all of those things. And I know I've like said that a lot on like my personal platforms, but I feel like there just isn't a, I don't feel like there's a better resource than like find a church that supports you, find a community of people that supports you, and like hold on to the Lord so tightly because when you experience loss, you want that relationship in place. You don't want to have to form that relationship, you know, with the Lord, even with other people. You don't want to have to start forming relationships that are deep and that are strong after a loss. You want to have that in place because hard stuff is going to come and it might be the loss of a kid. It might be smaller things, but yeah, having those things in place ahead of time is going to save you in a big way. So.
I completely agree that setting those foundations ahead of time, not that you're trying to like prepare for something awful to
No.
happen, but just having those foundations ahead of time so you have solid ground to stand on when things get shaky.
Yes. Absolutely.
You just finished another episode of the Ebb and Flow Birth Show. For more, head over to ebbandflowbirthco.com or on Instagram at ebbandflowbirthco. As a reminder, this podcast is provided to you for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not a substitute for medical advice. Until next time, bye, friends.